Hey, thanks for downloading this podcast. If you want to listen live, be sure to download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Happy Monday. It's Thanksgiving week, and it is time for a little fantasy sports today. Joe Pizzapia and Craig Mish going to recap all of the NFL games from the weekend and get you ahead to some college football and Thursday football eating. Goes hand in hand. Fantasy Sports Today starts now.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Toward the end zone. It is caught. Seattle's going to the Super Bowl.
Fires up the middle. Pass is caught by Owens. Owens made the catch.
Pass is caught. To White. He's in. Patriots win the Super Bowl.
And welcome in. This is Fantasy Sports Today. Craig Mish along with Joe Pizzapia with you here on the show. You can follow us on Twitter at FNTSY Radio, at Craig Mish, at Joe Pizzapia 17. Our producer, as always, Sean Guastamacchia, as we are about to embark on the final week of the regular season in virtually every fantasy league here. It's Thanksgiving week, which is the rite of passage to the fantasy football playoffs. And certainly yesterday was one of those days, Joe, where it was kind of make or break, I think, for a lot of people. And then if you're around the 500 mark, I think this week is really going to determine it. But certainly yesterday we saw some surprising outcomes for sure. Some really surprising offensive outcomes, I thought, were the story for yesterday, especially watching the 49ers dismantle Green Bay last night. And man, the Tennessee Titans, all of a sudden, I mean, weeks ago, I thought they were like the worst team in the NFL, but they take Mariota out. And now it looks like Tennessee could be a dangerous team moving forward. So some changing of the guard, so to speak, in the middle. And I think at the top, too, San Francisco looks like the clear favorite to me in the NFC.
Yeah, they certainly are after the Saints struggled at home again in a game that they probably shouldn't have struggled. In fact, if not for a missed field goal at the end there, that game probably would have gone into overtime. So definitely the Saints have surprised me. I thought when Breeze came back, they were just going to roll because they had looked so good defensively without Breeze. And I just figured, well, yeah, the offense and forget it. But they've had some issues, let's put it to the very least. They've won most of the games, but certainly not as dominating as the 49ers have been. And it's no surprise because we said on this show last week, if you watched carefully a couple weeks ago when the Chargers pass rush basically ate up that Packers offensive line for lunch, you knew the same thing was going to happen again. They had no answer for it. This is arguably a better group getting to the quarterback than the Chargers pairing. And my goodness, I mean, the only cheese there was Swiss cheese last night for the Packers. And they, again, just offense just could not get anything going at all last night. And you could see the frustration on Aaron Rodgers' face and, you know, frustration for fantasy owners as well. I think you're right. The 49ers certainly look like the team to beat. We'll see if the stage gets too big for them, or we'll see if they can continue to make these plays. I am just flabbergasted, and I don't use that word often because it's a silly, stupid word, but I am flabbergasted that you can actually continue to let the 49ers do this one thing that they do. They attack the middle of the football field with the passing game. That's it. You got to clog the middle. You got to find a way to make it work. You got to make Jimmy G throw the ball deep. You got to challenge him to be accurate downfield. If you let him throw these slants over the middle all the time to Debo or Kittle, whoever it is, they're just going to continue to just gain yardage. And with the Titans, yeah. I mean, ever since Ryan Tannehill took over, they've been really good. I mean, they just keep winning football games. And it's fun to watch. I like redemption stories. I don't know about you, Craig. I like redemption stories. And I feel like this Tannehill one is a good one. He had a lot of forces working against him in Miami, most of them named Adam Gase. And it's nice to see a kid who had some talent, who seemed to be trending in the right direction before the wheels came off in Miami, get a second breath of life here. And I'm really happy for him. I just feel like this is a great thing. Do you believe in what the Titans are doing, running the football and Tannehill making some good decisions and being athletic on his own and getting some yardage? Or do you think this is maybe them catching certain teams at the right time?
You know, it's probably a little bit of a combination of both. Gase was a huge Tannehill fan. I mean, he gave him every opportunity to succeed, refusing to draft a quarterback in the NFL draft for 3 years because he thought Tannehill was going to be good. Why it didn't work in Miami and it's working now is really hard to fathom, because you could make the case that Miami skill position players you know, when Tannehill was in his second and third year, were way better than what Tennessee has now. So it's really baffling to see. I know that Miami fans have kind of moved on from it, but my guess is that he can do enough to get them maybe into the playoffs. I don't see them as a real contender, but this does kind of remind me of every single Titans team where they start off the season, they look awful, and then all of a sudden Derrick Henry gets real hot, and you know, it's November, December, and Henry's running wild, and they get themselves to 9-7, they get in, and then they get smacked at the playoffs. But from a fantasy perspective, Tannehill looks like a guy that you could start in the fantasy playoffs. I never would have thought that, even with him coming in for Mariota at the beginning of the season, no doubt about that. And in terms of something else that's going on that we may have never seen before, I'd have to go back and look and see. Because, look, Torrey Holt, Isaac Bruce, look, there have been these dynamic 1-2 punch receivers, Rice and Owens in San Francisco. And we've had it before. But not to the level in fantasy, I don't think, that we're seeing with Godwin and Evans, Joe. And a huge bounce back for Tampa, which is a side note to this. But really the main note to this is that we could end up seeing the number one and number two fantasy receivers in the NFL be on Tampa Bay. Now, look, Michael Thomas will have something to say about that at the end. Of course he will. And it may not happen. But to think that even two guys could be in the top three or four is just incredible.
Yeah, it's definitely a fascinating thing. There's not a whole lot of them where you had trios, especially even on the same team. Sometimes you get the tight end thrown in there. The 1980 Chargers had three guys over 1,000 yards, Winslow, Jefferson, and Charlie Joyner. You had the old school Redskins. If you remember the Ricky Sanders, Gary Clark, Art Monk trio, that was one that had it. You had Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne, Brandon Stokely. And then not too long ago was 2008, where it's Fitzgerald, Anquan Boldin, and Steve Breston. There's a name I bet you haven't thought of in quite some time, right?
Yes, but those are three guys. I mean, these two guys are going to finish with, you know, 1,500 yards apiece. And 10
I know, touchdowns. But I'm just trying to say, like, even just, you know, it's so rare that you even get two or three guys on a team having 1,000 yards each at wide receiver. The fact that you're right, they could finish 1-2 is stunning. And, you know, it makes me kind of wonder, because when you watch the Bucs play now, and I watch that game, and I know you watch all the games too, I'm curious, do you think that they're a couple adjustments away from being a good football team? Or do you think they're just so...
No. Wait, hold on.
Well, or my other question was, or do you think they're just so aggressive that eventually, you know, I guess it's that same thing. You just keep taking enough shots like a crazy fighter. You're going to land some sometimes.
The quarterback isn't good. The defense isn't good. Mm-hmm. And they went up against a team that was severely overrated going into the week in Atlanta. There was just no buying into what they did the last couple of weeks. Every team in the NFL is going to win a couple games in a row. Atlanta had their little run. They'll probably lose every game the rest of the year. They look good for a bit and it's over. And Atlanta was not good. The Falcons were not going to completely change who they were just because they, with the play calling. I'm glad that's gone. I don't have to hear about that anymore. Falcons are not a good team. Metrically, they can hang with just about any team in the league, but the fact that they were a favorite going into this game was just the stupidest thing that I had seen all year long. Like, you can't go from how bad that you were. Back to Godwin and Evans. I've never seen this before. I've never seen a fantasy season where, again, 1,500, where you would have two first-round graded picks in fantasy from the same wide receiving core. I would have to go back and look. I'm going to say that this is the best ever. And it is only because Winston just throws the ball 50 times every game and just hopes for the best. And so, no, I'm not buying into Tampa. Yes, I think they're going to get their you-know-what handed to them the rest of the way. But for fantasy, it's great. And that's really all we really care about. And certainly, I think that Godwin and Evans, if I had to guess next year, one will be late first round, one will be early second. But, of course, the quarterback will be a factor there. We'll have to see who ends up. Because if I don't think it's going to be Winston, it'll be somebody else. We'll have to see what Arians can do with whoever that is. All right, so we are off and running here on this Monday. We'll take a quick timeout on Fantasy Sports Today. We'll come back. We've got the opening drive up next, where we'll go through all sports, baseball, football, basketball, even the Thanksgiving Day parade news. You're listening to FST. Craig and Joe with you here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're here every day from noon to 2 Eastern, and we'll be right back after this. Don't go away.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Then Then he pivots, fakes, chucks the big bomb halfway down the field to our hopefully still wide open tailback. I call it
Fantasy Sports Today with Craig Mish and Joe Pisapia. Fantasy Sports Today presents
first play from scrimmage.
The opening drive.
The first play of the game.
From the opening play and all the way for a touchdown.
And welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today. And this is the opening drive for Monday, November 25th. 2019. And just a quick programming reminder, Joe and I will be here on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. But on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, make sure you head over to Zumo TV, Pluto TV, and everything we're doing here on Sports Grid TV, because we will have live football coverage, Joe, and you will be involved in that on Thanksgiving Day.
I will. I will be there just like I am every game day, talking a little DFS with Mike Blewett. We're going to have some fun in the studio in New York. And then I'll be doing Roto Experts in the morning as well. So that'll be good times. Something like football and family and turkey and overeating until you want to pass out. So those are all the very American things to get behind.
Looking forward to Thursday. No doubt about that. Getting a nice day off as well. I wonder if, as we start off here on first down, what the sentiment is going to be as this story kind of percolates. And I would guess starts to get a little bit more attention. I didn't even notice this yesterday because, again, once the games are sort of over on the Sunday ticket, I move over to another game because a lot of it for me is not just fantasy, but it's also the wagering and all the picks that we have. So I didn't even notice at the end of the game that Dwayne Haskins missed the final snap of the Redskins game against the Lions, and that they couldn't find him. They had to put Case Keenum in because Haskins was taking a picture, or as we would say now these days, a selfie with a fan. So just thought I would mention this for first down, Joe, something that slipped by me yesterday, and I noticed it this morning.
Yeah, I saw it last night. And I mean, the kid was excited. He's a kid. Kids get excited. Kids like to take selfies of themselves. And you want to go out there and make sure you're doing your job first. I don't want to kill the guy on this. He made a mistake. He got excited. It's not like they win very often. It's not like a lot of good things happen there, especially in that stadium. So crowd was into it. He was into it. I mean, it's more important, I think, that he connect with the fans, that he's out there to just kneel on the football. But you got to be a professional first and foremost. So I'm not going to kill him for this. But he's a kid. You take him aside and say, hey, listen, kid, when the game is over, you go take selfies with the fans. Make sure your focus is on football. I think he just got a little excited and good. You know what? I'm glad he's excited. I'm glad he's excited for the W. They're few and far between for the Redskins. Is this something that if you were the coach, you would come down hard on him for? Or would you just kind of throw him aside and say, hey, look, smarten up, kid.
Probably not, but a funny story to see.
Like that would, oh, yeah.
That's not something that you see every day where a player misses. They can't find the player and they had to get Keenum to go on there and kneel. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, well,
like, what is Keenum thinking, by the way, at that point? Like,
this is all I'm good for. This is
really?
All I'm
like,
good
you want me
for.
To kneel at the end of the game? You can't find your quarterback?
Dude, he's getting paid. Yeah, I guarantee if you got Keenum's contract and they told you, hey, Craig Mish, go get your helmet on and go take a knee.
In.
You're in. You go. You take your knee.
I'd lay down. I'd crawl in if I had
to. You don't even have to wash your uniform.
Without looking at Keenum's contract, I'm guessing he's making at least a million or two this season.
Oh, I would imagine. Probably. Don't you think it might even be more than that? I think you're underselling him.
Because he was brought in to be the starter at the beginning of the year.
Well, that's what I mean. I was thinking it was probably more like five or six or something. Now I got to see. Here we go. Case Keenum on spot track. What's the contract details of Case Keenum? Come on. Let's see. What's the number? Why is it taking forever to load? I don't know. All right. $3.5 million. So there you go. Yeah, 1 year, $3.5 million. So split the difference. That's pretty good for the kneel there. That's $1 million kneel.
Based on his performance, he made like $1 million on that knee probably this year. All right, second down. Let's go to the NBA here a little bit. Luka Doncic, the hottest player in the NBA that nobody knows who he is. The Mavs are 11-5 on the season. The kid has scored 30 points, 10 assists in four straight games. He's had two 40-point games as well. And this kind of feels a little bit like when Giannis bursted out onto the scene. He had an okay first year. And then his second year, everybody knew Giannis by name. And Joe, this is a player in the NBA that everybody needs to take hold of here. The Mavericks were obviously not nearly supposed to be as good as they are this year, but this kid is not only going to be an all-star, but he's going to be in the conversation for all the world this year. What a great year he's having. What a great run this is.
Yeah, a Slovenian player who came to the Mavericks. And, clearly we've seen the NBA over the last generation become a world game, and you've seen a lot of players come in from all kinds. I remember even as a kid, Drazen Petrovic and Vlade Divac and those guys. I mean, I lived in New Jersey during the height of, as a kid, of the Drazen Petrovic era. And that guy was just an incredible shooter. I was just an incredible player. And it's great to see. I think when you expand the pool and you have more of a world game, you have the opportunity to bring in some unique talents. And clearly this kid is one of those talents. We'll see if he can keep it up. We've seen also guys have great runs in the NBA and then kind of disappear. So we'll see how time goes on. But certainly he's just 20 years old. The future is certainly bright for a kid of this age who's doing what he's doing already.
Yeah, he has kind of come out of nowhere a little bit. So a name to keep an eye on, both in season-long and DFS leagues. Let's go over to third down here. Let's move into some baseball here. The Atlanta Braves have basically decided they're going to be the ones that are going to be making all the free agent moves this offseason. And who would have thought 2 years ago that Travis d'Arnaud would, first of all, be in the league, second of all, be getting paid millions of dollars to catch on a contender? Travis d'Arnaud basically resurrected his entire career last season with Tampa Bay. He had gone with the Blue Jays and the Mets and was very excited when he went to the Mets. He didn't really turn out to be anything. And now he signs a 2-year contract, and he is going to be, at the very least, a split catcher, probably the primary catcher, I would guess, with the Atlanta Braves going into next year. The Braves have now made 3 of the 4 offseason moves.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. The R.A. Dickey crown jewel trade was Travis d'Arnaud. He was the piece. We were getting the catcher back, and there was a throw-in pitcher named Noah Syndergaard. So at the end of the day, Travis d'Arnaud was a huge bust. I watched Travis d'Arnaud, or should I say, I saw him a couple times because basically he was hurt the entire time he was a Met. It's always been a matter of health with this guy. I mean, you're looking at a dude who played 67 games, 75 games. Then he had 1 year in 2017 where he played 112. And he had he had 16 home runs. He didn't hit for a good average. The thing was, this kid in the minor leagues had always hit for a good average, been a high contact guy. You didn't think he was a big power guy. And then another year in 2018 where he played just 4 freaking games. Like you said, Craig, he ends up getting moved on. Next thing you know, he's a useful cog. But I think they overpaid a little bit here for a 31-year-old guy with enormous injury history. I don't get this at all. I understand, look, they've had a good luck a couple years pulling some guys like, Flowers, and they've gotten some good use out of him. They got some good use out of Kurt Suzuki for a couple years. So they have a good track record of picking up these veteran catchers, signing him to some deals and, letting them kind of platoon and play 80 games or whatever it is and get the most out of them from the right side of the plate that they want to. But I don't know, Craig. I look at this and I don't know how anyone can make any investment on this guy, because the entire career from age 24 to 30 basically tells you this is a guy who's never played more than 112 games. And I understand he's a catcher, but even so, as a catcher, the average amount of games you're getting out of him is somewhere around 60, if that. And that's just not good. I don't care what he did for an extended period last year. I don't think that's good enough to get that kind of contract.
Yeah, I guess the catching market is kind of thin with Grandal going off the board. And so potentially this is why the Braves struck on this one. I'm not really sure, but I don't
Did you get to that on Friday show? Because I know I'm not on Friday show and it's a big football day. I wasn't sure if that was a signing that you talked about at all.
No, we didn't know. No. Mm-mm.
All right. Wasn't sure. How'd you feel about that one? Do you think they overpaid for Grandal, or do you think that was a fair deal?
I don't know. I mean, look, the White Sox basically, to me, are taking all of the money that they didn't use on Harper last year or Machado and using it on guys now. That's what kind of what it feels like, because they offered both those guys $300 million.
Yeah, and signed Abreu, too, with that money, too, and just extended him.
$50 million. Yeah, $50 million to him. All right, so here is, unfortunately, some bad news as we end the opening drive. It looks like there is a chance, and again, we don't know for sure, that there will be no flying balloons at the Thanksgiving Day parade, Joe, because of high wind possibilities in New York on Thursday. Now, I'm going to guess that this has happened before, but I don't recall it. And so what a bummer. And I obviously won't be there. I'll be in Florida during this time, but I like to watch it with my kids. And man, that's bad news to go into a Thursday.
Well, I can tell you what, I don't know what makes anybody want to sit there and just watch the parade. Then if there's no balloons, what's the point? You're going to get a bunch of marching band stuff. I'm not a big fan of the marching bands. Okay. I'm going to put it out there. I'm not a fan. I respect it. Don't like it. Not a big fan. Most of the Broadway shows nowadays are not that great or exciting. So they do all those little, spots and things like that. But as a New Yorker, I've been to the parade one time as a kid. Froze my butt off. We went out there. It was fun. I think I was like 8 years old. I remember it. I remember drinking hot chocolate, being cold, seeing some balloons and stuff. It was fun. I never had a desire to go back ever. It's much better on TV. I can't imagine without the balloons. What's the point? I mean, why even bother doing
it? Sure.
Craig? I don't know. Just, I think I read today that it was the threshold is close to the threshold of 35 mile an hour winds. So I don't know. I mean, it could make the parade really interesting. Don't you think?
They got to get it in.
Flying around.
Yeah, they got to get it in somehow. They got to figure it out.
Half-mast balloons.
They got to get it in. I don't know how. All right. That's the opening drive here on this Monday. Coming up next, we're going to dive into some of the NFL game capsules. We'll start off with the two high scoring games two of the three high scoring games of the day. Saints and Panthers, Buccaneers and Falcons. You're listening to Fantasy Sports Today. Craig Mish and Joe Pizzapia. Don't go away.
NFL season is now upon us, and you can become the eighth person to win $1 million in a FanDuel or DraftKings tournament by setting their lineups using the DailyRoto.com DFS Lineup Optimizer. If you are playing daily fantasy sports and not using DailyRoto.com, you're doing it wrong. Sign up now for the NFL access with a faster optimizer, smarter DFS projections, and better results. Enter promo code ACTION for a 10% discount. That's promo code ACTION for a 10% discount. DailyRoto.com, where millionaires are made.
Fantasy Sports Today with Craig Mish and Joe Pizzapia. The Monday Replay. Well, here we at number. The Monday Replay.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Want to be the next daily fantasy millionaire? Dunk on your NBA DFS competition with DailyRoto.com and dominate on FanDuel and DraftKings this season. Compete with the pros with the DailyRoto.com optimizer and the most accurate projections in NBA DFS, plus lineup alerts, breaking news, late swap support, and much more. Save 10% on winning NBA DFS advice with the promo code DUNK. Visit DailyRoto.com/dunk to learn more. That's DailyRoto.com/dunk. DailyRoto.com, where millionaires are made. And speaking of which, yesterday, Joe, I had a chance to check out the King of the Beach, which was at the Lowe's Hotel in Miami Beach, where I believe it was somewhere between 75 and 100 people participating in the DraftKings contest to end up winning the championship. But needless to say, it was very tight because you couldn't use the night game. So it was basically the day slate, the 1 o'clock Eastern and 4 o'clock Eastern games. And it was very tight at the top until Derrick Henry went crazy. And then that, at that point, changed the entire standings. And really interesting how one guy can just completely change from first place to 10th place. And congratulations to Fantasy Alarm. The guys were almost at it was about 5 o'clock, and they were in third place overall. And then unfortunately, Derrick Henry just ran over everybody. But a fun time. I've never been to any kind of these finals. It was the first time I had ever been. It was really interesting.
Yeah, I was one back in the day in 2015 in FanDuel. I was one in Las Vegas, which was super fun. That was that weekend. Bo Jackson was there. We had the home run derby thing. That was the big one for baseball. That was the MLB one, and that was great fun. It was a huge event. They had all the TVs going, and just, you know, big prize and everything. And it was beautiful. It was fun. Great time. We got there to cover it for a couple of days, and they put on big fun events. I gotta say, I don't know, you know, if they do them the same scale as they did back in 2015, but certainly some of those fun events. And if you're interested in those kind of qualifiers, then you could certainly go that route and play those contests to get into these kind of things. But you're going to be going up against people who are, you know, like these groups of Fantasy Alarm and Guru and these other big DFS companies, Daily Roto. You're going to be going up against those kind of folks. So make sure you do your homework. And Derrick Henry certainly was a game changer across the board yesterday, not just in those kind of contests, but everywhere. You saw all kinds of pay lines move. You saw all kinds of lineups that were cash and get bumped out. So it was fun to see. But I know this first game we're going to talk about certainly had a lot of those players in it that were very impactful as well.
Yeah, the Saints looked like they were going to blow the Panthers out very early on in this game, and then Carolina just kept fighting back, but Saints did win 34-31. Joey Sly had a tough, tough game here in this one, the kicker for Carolina, which really probably ended up costing him the game. Sly even said after the game, "I cost my team the game." Drew Brees, 3 touchdowns, 1 pick, 311 yards. Alvin Kamara, 54 rush yards, 9 catches, 48 receiving yards, so did fine with combining those two for sure. Latavius Murray ended up getting back in the end zone. Michael Thomas, another monster game. 10 catches, 101 yards, and a touchdown. Does it every week. And Jared Cook busted on the scene a little bit. 6 catches, 98 yards, and a touchdown for him. We'll see if he's more a part of the Saints offense going forward. For Carolina, Kyle Allen, 256 yards and 3 touchdowns. Christian McCaffrey, another 30-point fantasy day. What's new with him? 22 carries, 64 yards. 9 catches, 69 yards, and a touchdown. He actually rushed for a touchdown. They called it back because he was down right near the goal line. And then on the following play, they faked the ball to him and then threw it to him, and he caught a touchdown. So he got it anyway. DJ Moore, 6 catches, 126 yards, 2 touchdowns. He's been excellent with Allen in there. And as I mentioned, if you started Joey Sly, you may have gotten some negative points yesterday. A couple missed extra points and that missed field goal. So Carolina definitely had their opportunities here. And you can make the case, Joe, that they should have won this game with all the missed field goals. And look, I mean, this could be a game that they look back when they don't, if they don't make the playoffs, they'll look at this game certainly as it. But Saints defense is kind of falling back a little bit from what they looked like in the first half of the season when Teddy Bridgewater was playing. But Drew Brees ends up doing just enough to get them the win.
Yeah, it's so bizarre to me. And I know they didn't have Marshawn Lattimore last week either. And I understand he's been banged up, but still, it's really perplexing that they've struggled since Brees has come back. I guess they, I don't know if they rallied around or just got more focused and now they got relaxed a little bit. The breeze is back. I don't know what's going on. It's not a great look. It was good to see Kyle Allen bounce back after an awful game last week at home. So it was a good game for him. Even though he got sacked four times, he still had the three touchdowns. Great throw there to DJ Moore, too, which was only a matter of time before DJ Moore started getting some touchdowns. He's had a ton of red zone looks the last three games. Finally, he converted a bunch of them here. So two touchdowns for him. That's what you want. DJ Moore, a guy that was highlighted on the DFS show on Sunday morning very much by me because I am a big fan of the floor, big fan of the price. He's always been around 6K, which is a huge return on that day. CMC, look, what else is there to say except he's awesome? The trouble is in the DFS world, he's been 10.5 the last couple weeks on both sites, and it's really difficult unless you're going stars and scrubs to get him in lineups, whereas Michael Thomas is around 9.2. So if you're saving $1,000 and change and you want a premium player, especially on the full point PPR on DK, I see no reason not to always pay for Michael Thomas. He is money in the bank. Yeah, you pay the premium, but you get the premium. It's kind of like a couple of years back, I remember the two best return on investment guys in DFS were Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown a few years ago in the same season on the same team. And the funny part about them was they were also the two highest priced guys all year in terms of cost. And Kamara, certainly good to see him bouncing back to nice all-purpose day. No touchdown, but Cook, you mentioned, that's the guy to keep an eye on. Now this is two games in a row with the touchdown. If you're going to start to see him get more work in just period, six catches, that's a lot for Cook in a game. This is what I was hoping for in the beginning of the year. So if you're going to see a strong finish here in the red zone with Cook, I think this is a real thing you got to pay attention to and get him in some lineups.
Yeah, tight end is always going to be, at this time of the year, very coveted with the weather changing for sure. And right, a lot of these over the middle routes could be something for Cook. We'll see. He's been as inconsistent as any tight end in football in fantasy for the last 5 years. And I don't know, maybe it will.
Last year, he was very consistent, but the problem was it was on the Raiders. So nobody expected it. Now everyone expected it because he was consistent last year. And now he moved to Drew Brees, and Brees has had good track record with some tight ends like Jimmy Graham, but not so much. But hopefully maybe that's changing now.
Didn't they love Cook when he was on the Rams too? It didn't work out, right?
I don't remember if they left him on the Rams. I just remember like him in Green Bay. I remember Green Bay. How many teams has this guy been on? I thought it was just the Raiders. I thought it was just the Raiders and the Packers. I didn't realize.
Maybe I'm wrong on that.
I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and look at that. Anyway.
We'll certainly see if he ends up being somebody that you could start down the stretch. It's just always been, for me, really inconsistent with him over the course of his career. Jared Cook. Tennessee is what I was thinking of.
Tennessee. Okay, right. All right. I was going to say, I don't remember the Rams. I do remember Tennessee there.
And then he played with the Rams. And then he played with Green Bay and then Oakland and New Orleans. So, yeah.
So yeah, I'm not going
to. St. Louis Rams.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I don't know. I mean, like I said,
I remember thinking he was going to be good then. It didn't work out.
I remember him as a young kid in Tennessee. I remember that. And he had some moments there. But look, you know, sometimes it takes guys a little later, you know? You know, we've seen tight ends come out of the gate. We thought we were going to be good, and they weren't. And then all of a sudden, Tony Gonzalez was not good for the first year and a half of his career. Go back and look at those. Drop City, baby. He was terrible. And all of a sudden, he became the greatest tight end ever. So work ethic, talent, it all comes together sometimes. He ain't, you know, Jared Cook ain't Tony Gonzalez, but sometimes guys figure it out later.
Buccaneers beat the Falcons 35-22, so a ton of points scored in this game. Winston had a Winston game, basically. 313 yards, three touchdowns, two interceptions. He also rushed for 38 yards. Ronald Jones, 12 for 51 and a touchdown, 3 for 44. Tough to figure him out on a week-to-week basis, too. Godwin was the big receiver of the day in fantasy across the board, 7 for 184 and two touchdowns. Mike Evans had 4 for 50 in this game. Matt Ryan had a rough one. No touchdowns, one pick, 271. Allison, who scored his first touchdown last week, got another one this week for 20 yards. Brian Hill has done absolutely nothing, so that has not worked out, not even close. 9 carries, 14 yards, 3 catches for 13 yards. Calvin Ridley had the big game for Atlanta, 6 for 85. Gage had 8 for 76. Julio Jones was in and out with a shoulder injury throughout this game. They kept taking him in and putting him out, taking him in, putting him out. So not a huge surprise there based on the stat line. But Atlanta just basically turned back into a pumpkin in this game, Joe. And, you know, they had a nice little run there, a 2-win run. At the end of the year, Atlanta's going to end up winning 6 games or 5 games, whatever it is. But I don't think that their defense is fixed by any stretch of the imagination. And, you know, they came out of the bye looking real good. Ryan struggled a little bit. But Tampa's offense is very dangerous. They don't play any defense either. And so my guess is Tampa will just continue to have these really high scoring games. They played I believe 11 games now on the season, or 12. Is it 11? 11 or 12? I don't know. But they've gone over more than any other team in the Vegas total in the NFL, and their team total more than any team in the NFL, too. So this is what Tampa Bay is. This is what Bruce Arians is. They're going to have a lot to fix in the offseason. But for now, they're helping you out in fantasy. That's for sure.
Yeah, they are. Brian Hill's not helping you out, that's for sure. So that was a bust of a pickup, unfortunately. So, and then all of a sudden, look, I mean, that's going to be a guy, too. If Freeman can't go next week, then he'll be the next man up there on the waiver wire. And everyone keeps searching and chasing these guys in Atlanta for the last couple of weeks. Calvin Ridley did have a good game, 6 for 85 in the touchdown there. Really like Ridley in this contest because I thought with all the attention Julio was going to get. But what happened was when Julio had the injury issue, I think it really kind of stunted them because, you know, this offense can continue to be good whenever Julio's on the field. Whenever he's not, that's the problem. You could lose Freeman. You could lose Hooper. When you lose Julio, you lose that threat. And all of a sudden when that happens, it's just very difficult for Atlanta to score points at the end of the day. They need him on the field healthy or not. So if he's coming out of games, that's a big issue there. And, you know, you mentioned Ronald Jones earlier. I don't think any of us know what to think of Ronald Jones. I think what you do is you just keep throwing him out there and you hope for the best. And I think next year you hope that they can build on this. And Chris Godwin is just a beast. I mean, my God, 184. I mean, these numbers are just mind-blowing this year that him and Evans have had some of these games in the 180s multiple times. It's crazy.
So who would you rather have the rest of the season, Godwin or Evans? Which one?
You know, I feel like Godwin's had a better floor. So, like, the floor has been a little lower for Evans because he's had some bad games. He had a couple bad games early on, the other stinker in the middle of the season. So I think Godwin's the more consistent, but I think Evans has the weekly upside. But I'll tell you what, next year in the draft, I'm happy to take Godwin because I can get him a little later. So that would be my preference because he's going to cost me less.
What round do you think for Godwin? Second round?
Sure. I mean, it's got to be early second at this point. And they've got to be going almost back to back. It's kind of like the situation going into this year with the expectation of the same concept of like, well, Woods and Kupp and Cooks were all in that same grouping. I feel like these guys are going to be all in that same grouping, but instead of the third or fourth round, they're going to be in the second round, probably right around the turn.
Yeah, they've been.
I'll tell you what, you can make an argument, Craig, that if you're at 12 in a full point PPR, you took both of those guys with your 12 and then first pick in the second round. I ain't arguing with that. That's a hell of a start. You know, somebody's having a good day.
Yeah, I think. But again, we got to see who the quarterback is going to be. That's a huge, huge factor. Right. They end up with a rookie quarterback and we could eliminate that from the conversation. All right. Coming up next, we're going to dive into a couple of the other games. Unfortunately, a couple of blowouts yesterday. Well, kind of blowouts. Jets and Raiders, which definitely was a blowout. Bills seem to blow out teams every week, but you wouldn't call it that because they play close games. But we'll dive into those games next from a fantasy perspective. Don't go away.
NFL season is now upon us, and you can become the eighth person to win $1 million in a FanDuel or DraftKings tournament by setting their lineups using the DailyRotor.com DFS lineup optimizer. If you are playing daily fantasy sports and not using DailyRotor.com, you're doing it wrong. Sign up now for the NFL access with a faster optimizer, smarter DFS projections, and better results. Enter promo code ACTION for a 10% discount. That's promo code ACTION for a 10% discount. DailyRotor.com, where millionaires are made.
Fantasy Sports Today with Craig Mish and Joe Pisapia.
And welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today. Craig Mish and Joe Pisapia as we are back and wrapping up this first hour of the program, diving into some of the game capsules in the NFL. We got full-time fantasy coming up at 2 o'clock Eastern. Dr. Roto will catch up with you, give you all the latest news and notes from the NFL, update you on injuries. All the coaches usually speak in the late morning, early afternoon, and give you an idea who you could see on the field this week. Of course, a very short week for six teams in the NFL because we have Thanksgiving Day games this year. Looks like potentially two games out of the three could end up being good. Joe and I will break those down for you on Wednesday. All right, Jets and Raiders. Boy, this was the one that everybody had the Jets in this one, including me. But I just it was so fishy. I was like, how can everybody be on the Jets in one week? But, you know, this is one of those that it definitely paid off. Jets were the second most picked team in the the Westgate Super Contest, too. And boy, that was definitely the right pick, I guess. Sam Darnold, 315 pass yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 rushing touchdown. Le'Veon Bell does what Le'Veon Bell does, gives you volume, 12 carries, 49 yards, 5 catches, 59 yards. Robbie Anderson has shown his face here a little bit lately. Back-to-back weeks with a touchdown, 4 catches, 86 yards. And Ryan Griffin, I know a lot of people liked him, and for good reason. He has been on fire as a tight end in fantasy, and thank goodness he got a touchdown because he didn't do much else, but he ended up getting the 8 to 10 fantasy points. You can't complain with him. Raiders, yeah, just a complete bust fantasy-wise across the board. Carr, 127 and a pick. Jacobs did nothing. His worst game probably as a pro. Waller, 3 for 41. His first half has not been the same in the second half, and teams are starting to game plan for him. Makes sense. Tyrell Williams also, his first half, not the same in the second half, 2 for 18. And so, you know, Darnold, who I like, continues to play well. The Jets, Joe, are I don't think that they have any dreams about getting in the playoffs, but, you know, they do have some really easy matchups down the stretch. And it's funny, the fantasy playoffs could end up having a lot of Jets in your lineup. You never would have thought that a few weeks ago. Adam Gase got that vote of confidence. They've played better since they've given him that vote of confidence. And on the flip side, this was a game the Raiders really had to win. Even in a close game, they really had to win this one. And now there are just so many teams that are 6-5. This is going to go down to the last game. And I'm going to guess we're going to have a Sunday night football game, Joe, on the last week of the season that's going to determine the final playoff spot, because there's just too many teams bunched up right now.
Yeah, there are. And look, the Jets have played better. The schedule's gotten a little easier for them, too. You start to play the Giants, you play the Redskins, you play the Raiders. Everything looks a lot better. But we talked about this weeks ago, and this is why you wanted to trade for Le'Veon Bell. And I want to highlight Le'Veon Bell for a moment, because this was another big highlighted guy on the Line Star Pod, on the DFS Today Show with Blewett and myself on Sunday morning, because not everybody has the high ceiling. All right, you have to look at some players like Le'Veon Bell, who on FanDuel always sits kind of in that 7K range. And that kind of a dude who you know is going to have probably 100 all-purpose yards, probably going to have 5-6 catches. Right off the bat, you already know you're looking at 16, 18 points depending. And then the thing is, you haven't gotten a lot of touchdowns. You have to assume, just like with Fournette, yeah, just like with DJ Moore, that these touchdowns are going to come because the volume's been there and it's just going to happen eventually. And then it does. And yesterday, he got the touchdown. All of a sudden, boom, that jumps up to the 24-point range, and he becomes a more than 3X player, and that's something to pay attention to. And Le'Veon Bell should be on everybody's DFS radar going forward. He has a great opportunity here for all-purpose yardage and some touchdown upside. Nice to see Robbie Anderson get back into it. Ryan Griffin, journeyman tight end, playing for 6 years in the league, was nobody. Here's another guy, right? Kind of a nobody for the Texans for years. You'd see him every now and then catch a touchdown. It's a one-off. And now all of a sudden he's become a go-to guy. Certainly he saved his day with the touchdown there. And Darnold played relatively well. Terrible roughing the passer call there. It was nonsense where the guy fell on top of Darnold. He was trying to hurt Darnold. They were just all falling on top of each other, trying to tackle him. Terrible call there that kind of it swung the game early momentum-wise, and the Raiders never really recovered from that. But if we talked about the Raiders the last couple weeks as, hey, you know, their inexperience is working in their favor because they don't know any better and they've bounced back and they're buying in, I think this was the game where inexperience hurt them. On the road, flying across the country, they got hit in the mouth early and they didn't recover from it. And I wonder with Waller too, are you getting any kind of sense that Waller might be a flash in the pan kind of guy? Or do you think this is just guys game planning him and, you know, a little game bit film. Differently?
Yeah. Okay. Film. That's it.
Okay.
I mean, when your best option is a tight end, you just look at the overhead.
That's why I keep saying AJ Green's, that's the guy for them next year. That's the guy. He fits in perfect for them.
Yeah, we'll see. Bills beat the Broncos 20-3. Denver just, this could be the end for Denver, man. After last week's game where you're up so big on such a good team, they just were completely flat in this game against Buffalo, but the Bills will do that. They'll lull you to sleep. The Bills, by the way, go over their season win total with this win. One of the few teams that have done that. I mean, we're not even in December and they went over. So congratulations to people who bet on that. A great year for them, no matter what happens the rest of the way. Josh Allen, 185 and 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. Finally, Devin Singletary, it took all year, but there it was. 100-yard game, his first of his career. On 21 carries, maybe he'll be a factor in the fantasy playoffs. We'll see. But at the very least, this was his best game that he's had so far as his career. It just took a long time.
First of many, let's hope.
I would not go there, but 100 yards is definitely something to build on for sure. Frank Gore, by the way, passed Barry Sanders on the all-time rushing list yesterday.
Amazing.
Cole Beasley, 6 for 76. Man, maybe I have something here on Cole Beasley. We'll see. 6 catches, 76 yards, a touchdown. John Brown, I don't care what anybody says, he's a wide receiver 1 in fantasy football. 2 catches, 39 yards, another touchdown for this guy. Phenomenal year. Pro bowler, put him wherever you want. He has been awesome. On the Denver side, well, it just didn't go well in Buffalo. Brandon Allen, 82 yards, a pick. Lindsay, 1357. Shocking to see Freeman only get two carries yesterday. I don't know what happened there. Didn't watch closely enough to figure that out either. And Sutton just, he had his worst game of the year. He just couldn't do anything because the Bills defense shut them down. And that's kind of what the Bills can do at home. And when they have a better opponent offensively, Joe, that throws the ball around a little bit, I think teams will keep it close with Buffalo. But the problem is that Denver plays that game where they just want to run you to sleep. And that is just not the game plan that's going to work against the Buffalo Bills. That's what happened yesterday. Look, Buffalo's heading to the playoffs. They're probably a 10-win team, I would guess, in the NFL.
Oh, yeah.
They'll probably have a home game in the first round, too. And it'll probably be a close game in the first round, too. I feel like we're headed toward Buffalo, Tennessee again. You know, it's like every year it's Buffalo, Tennessee.
I think this will be an infinitely more entertaining version of that game, though.
I hope so. But
oh, come on. Josh Allen's been really entertaining to watch.
Can't guarantee anything with the Bills. Can't guarantee it. But either way, they've been fantasy relevant all season, too. They've been really impressive.
Yeah. Oh, look, the Bills secondary, God knows that's my favorite one, pretty much. I mean, they're really good. They play good man coverage. They hit hard. And look, they did a good job here of shutting down Sutton. Allen Bowl clearly went to Josh Allen, and he was part of that lineup. Remember last week we did that segment about the value lineup that seems like a cash game lineup, but it's really just the average salary of each player at each position that usually wins $1 million. That lineup scored 181 points this week. So there you go. This works. This concept works. I encourage everyone to kind of stick to this as a concept, and I'm sure we'll do it again this week. But Cole Beasley, I'm not surprised here he had this game because John Brown had a tougher assignment with corner, so that was a little tougher matchup for him, yet he still had a touchdown, which was great. And good for Frank Gore, man, 15 for 65 and going to third all-time. Barry Sanders, of course, congratulated him on Twitter because he is a very classy individual, and he's that guy. He's been that workhorse guy, an incredibly long career, unbelievable to stay healthy and play as long as he has in the NFL. So good job by him. And I know Lindsay was a big bust. A lot of people in the DFS community really liked Lindsay this week, but I thought that was a tough sell just because although it looks good on paper, you got to figure how good can Brandon Allen be against this defense. And I think the other thing you learn is last week against Minnesota, when he was slinging the ball around, it tells you where Xavier Rhodes is right now. So keep that in mind going forward with those matchups. Whoever Xavier Rhodes has, I wouldn't be thinking like, oh my gosh, he shut down that day. Uh-uh, it's not happening anymore.
Bears beat the Giants 19-14. Once again, how the Bears could be, you know, touchdown favorites over anyone in the NFL is mystifying. And another game where they don't score in the first quarter. I really should have done my research today before the show. I feel like this has happened at least 6 or 7 times where they just don't even score in the first quarter. They look brutal. And then all of a sudden, Trubisky wakes up in the second half every game. It's incredible. 278 through the air, 1 touchdown, 2 picks. You just cannot start this guy anywhere. David Montgomery, same thing. I'm going to head into the playoffs with this guy, not knowing what to do. 13 carries, 22 yards. Allen Robinson had a nice game after a dud last week. 6 for 131, 1 touchdown. Anthony Miller seems to be playing better, at least as of late. 6 for 77 on the Giants side. Disappointing, but it was the Bears defense. It was on the road. Daniel Jones, 150 and 2 touchdowns. Barkley, 17 for 59. He's had a rough go of it since he's come back. Slayton, 4 for 59. Another touchdown for Golden Tate, 3 for 33, and another touchdown there. And Caden Smith, who I didn't know existed until yesterday, 5 catches for 72 yards.
No one knew he existed, I can tell you that. But yeah, Golden Tate is the golden child. He just keeps on giving. I'll tell you what, Darius Slayton is a big-bodied wide receiver. Darius Slayton has been a very impressive rookie. Daniel Jones needs to stop fumbling the football. He's got 10 fumbles on the year. I don't know if you realize that, Craig. 10. Yep. That is an enormous amount of fumbles. You got to protect the football. If you're getting sacked, you need to go down, get sacked, and stop turning the football over. It's killing drives. It's killing this team. And it's killing a already bad defense. And the fact that the Bears struggled in the first half against this terrible Giants defense tells you everything about that. And you know what? Barkley, I don't know. This is just seeming like a lost year for him. He's just not... I know he wasn't on the injury report, but he certainly
doesn't
look like
Barkley. Why are they playing him? I have no idea.
I don't know. He doesn't look like Barkley, but he's not on the injury report. I don't know what to think anymore about all this, Craig. It's very, very confusing. I've got a lot of emotions about it, and I don't know what to feel about it, but it's frustrating.
They shouldn't play him. They should sit him down. Right now, the Giants, because of the Redskins winning, they've moved themselves into tank mode here as the second overall pick in the draft, which enables them to potentially get this kid Chase Young from Ohio State. Like, just do it. Like, stop. Yeah. Like, this is exactly what you need. I don't know what they should just bench everybody.
Man. I agree. And I'll tell you what, the other thing, you know, every now and then you see certain players and they're kind of flying under the radar. Next year, I feel like Slayton's kind of one of those guys. Next year, I think he's going to be one of the Black Book favorites of a great wide receiver four kind of guy that you're going to plug in. It's probably going to end up as a wide receiver two potentially. Like, he's going to be a lower ranking for a lot of reasons, and I don't think he should be. I think he's one of these guys. I just think this was his first year, and he's done a lot of impressive things as far as I'm concerned, watching him play every week.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing too, let's not get too crazy here, because the other thing too is that you could make the case that going into this season, and I know you did like Tate, but beyond Tate, the best two options that Daniel Jones had are both not playing. And if Slayton is going to be in a position that those guys aren't there next year too, then I will agree with you. But if you're telling me that Sterling Shepard is back and healthy, and you're telling me that Evan Engram is back and healthy, it's a completely different story for me. With the Giants.
I'll tell you this. I'm just gonna say this about Sterling Shepard. He's a smaller wide receiver by comparison too. Not as big of a body guy in the red zone. On top of which, we're talking about a guy who's had numerous concussions now in one season, and we all know sometimes what happens with that.
No, we do. And with the Rams, it hasn't mattered. You know, like, Cooks has been out. The other guys haven't done well. And maybe that's part of the quarterback, too. It's just I think that it's good to look at early, but I definitely want to see what the person.
That's why I keep saying, as an investment, as a wide receiver four, I think he's a really good investment next year, because I could see Sterling Shepard missing time again, or who knows how healthy he is on the field. Awesome. Or, all you know, you start to develop a rapport with a young quarterback. Next thing you know, he becomes that guy.
All right, so let's set you up. That's hour number one in the books. We got the best of the first hour coming up next. And then what we'll do is we'll continue the game capsules for the later 1 o'clock Eastern games and the 4 o'clock Eastern games. And Joe and I will run through the fantasy ramifications from that. We also have updates in college football, a little bit of a shakeup there with a big loss by one team that puts them out of the conversation in the college football playoff, and a preview of Monday Night Football as well. So stay tuned. Plenty more to come here on Fantasy Sports Today. Craig Mish and Joe Pizzapia back with you, and best of the first hour, and then hour number two starts next. So don't go away.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice, we play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Fantasy Sports Today with Craig Mish and Joe Pizzapia.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today. As we wrap up the first hour of the show, here's what you missed. Raiders, yeah, just a complete bust fantasy-wise across the board. Carr, 127 and a pick. Jacobs did nothing. His worst game probably as a pro. Waller, 3 for 41. His first half has not been the same in the second half, and teams are starting to game plan for him. Makes sense. Tyrell Williams also, his first half not the same in the second half, 2 for 18. And so, you know, Darnold, who I like, continues to play well. The Jets, Joe, are I don't think that they have any dreams about getting in the playoffs, but, you know, they do have some really easy matchups down the stretch, and it's funny. The fantasy playoffs could end up having a lot of Jets in your lineup. You never would have thought that a few weeks ago. Adam Gase got that vote of confidence. They've played better since they've given him that vote of confidence. And on the flip side, this was a game the Raiders really had to win. Even in a close game, they really had to win this one. And now there are just so many teams that are 6-5. This is going to go down to the last game. And I'm going to guess we're going to have a Sunday night football game, Joe, on the last week of the season that's going to determine the final playoff spot, because there's just too many teams bunched up right now.
Yeah, there are. And look, the Jets have played better. The schedule's gotten a little easier for them, too. You start to play the Giants, you play the Redskins, you play the Raiders. Everything looks a lot better. But we talked about this weeks ago, and this is why you wanted to trade for Le'Veon Bell.
And we'll be right back with more Fantasy Sports Today, hour number two, if you're listening live, or if you're listening on demand. This is FNTSY Radio, Craig Mish, Fantasy Sports Today.